Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Mark Goulston, MD. He is the author of Just Listen, the number one international top-selling book on listening. Dr. Goulston is the co-creator and moderator of the new documentary about suicide prevention, Stay Alive, an intimate conversation about suicide prevention. The documentary contains his conversations with Kevin Hines, who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived, and Reiko, a Japanese pop singer and suicide prevention advocate. For more than 25 years in a private psychiatric practice, Dr. Goulston has specialized in suicide prevention, where his principal approach to prevention has been interventional empathy. His book, Just Listen, has been published in 22 languages around the world. His guest appearance on the Harvard Business Review podcast was ranked number one out of over 600 shows. Good morning, Dr. Goulston, and welcome to Living Above the Drama. It is such a pleasure to have you on.
God, I sound like a legend in my own mind, Georgiana.
Well, hey, listen, my job is to communicate your achievements, and they are numerous. And so we're delighted that you're going to share your expertise, your international knowledge and experience with us, especially on a very urgent and important subject, unfortunately, in our culture today, which seems to be a runaway wave of especially young people taking their lives. So would you start us, please? Talk to us. You can start anywhere you want. You can either start talking about the wonderful work you're doing in the documentary, or you can take us back to how you got into this. And I'm sure that either way, the listener will be fascinated.
Well, thank you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. And my approach, and I was pretty effective for 25 years, my approach was going in to the dark night of the soul and keeping people company. And I have this, I'm a medical doctor, and I have this view that psychological wounds are similar to physical wounds. And when you have a physical wound, you have to go in, clean it out. And when you clean it out, you leave a drain in, and you don't suture the physical wound prematurely. You leave a drain in, and it granulates, meaning it heals from the inside out. Well, my view of when people are feeling suicidal, they have a deep psychological wound that's in their psyche, their soul, their spirit, and you have to go in there and keep them company so that they feel felt, not just understood, feel felt, so they feel less alone. And then I would leave an empathic drain in there, and they would heal from their inside out with hope. What I realized, it was interesting, when I started out in my career, one of my first mentors was a suicide prevention pioneer by the name of Dr. Ed Schneidman, and anyone who knows anything about suicide knows about him. He co-founded the suicide prevention centers in Washington and Los Angeles and started something called the American Association of Suicidology. And Ed would refer me still suicidal patients from the inpatient wards at UCLA. And they weren't acutely suicidal, so you can't keep them there forever. And the residents didn't necessarily want to see them as outpatients because they were still wishing they were dead. So Ed would refer them to me, and it was always the same phone call with Georgiana. He'd say, "Mark, this is Ed. I'm here with this lovely young woman. I'm here with this handsome young man. They're in a lot of pain, Mark. You could help them. See them." He put them on the phone. They could then be discharged. And I'll tell you, early on in my training, I was like a lot of other people. I wanted to make sure that I checked all the boxes. But what I noticed is when I would see these people who had made multiple attempts and I was checking boxes, I kept noticing in their eyes that they were checking out. It's like they were saying to me, this is kind of urgent and you're checking boxes. Now, I understand you have to do that and you have to follow protocols, but what happened is that I got more experience, and because I didn't work for an institution, I just threw that away, and I kept just listening into their eyes. And I mean that exactly, listening into people's eyes. And listening into people's eyes means you look into people's eyes, and And anyone can do this. It just depends what you focus on. And when you look into people's eyes who are depressed, they are screaming out at you with hurt, fear, anger, discouragement. And they need to see that you're hearing them, you're feeling them. And then when that happens, they they start to tear up because they feel less alone. And as they tear up, they start to feel better. Can I share? There was one anecdote that just changed everything that was a game changer. Can I share
sure.
that?
Sure, of course.
So I would say this one really comes to mind. I'm pausing because I may actually feel the emotion, and maybe you will as I'm telling the story. So there's a woman that we will call Nancy. She'd made several suicide attempts before I'd started seeing her. She'd been in the hospital 2 to 3 months every year for 4 years. That's when you could be in the hospital that long. And she was probably the most suicidal person I'd seen. And when I saw her, I didn't think I was helping her at all. She rarely made eye contact. And but you know, I was seeing her 6 months, a couple times a week, and our conversations were very brief, and I was just trying to get through. And that was the longest she'd gone without a suicide attempt. But then again, I didn't push her into the hospital, force her into the hospital, even though she made me nervous. And in those days, I used to moonlight, which means once a month I would go to one of the state psychiatric hospitals, and I'd cover for the doctors, and I'd do admissions, and I'd do medications and whatnot. And sometimes you'd be up 36 hours, so you could be a little overtired. So there was one weekend where I was up 36 hours, and on Monday, Nancy comes in, and I'm sleep deprived. And as I'm in the room and she's not looking at me, all the color in the room turns to black and white. So I'm looking out, and the room is black and white. And I thought, this is really weird. And then I got very chilly. I get the chills all through me. And I thought, oh, I'm having a stroke or seizure. So I'm a medical doctor, and I did a neurologic exam on myself. I'm tapping my knees. I'm looking at my fingers. I'm tapping my elbows. And it wasn't rude because she wasn't looking at me. And then I thought to myself, I'm not having a stroke or seizure. I'm all here. And then I had this crazy idea that I was looking at the world and through her eyes and feeling it. And because I was sleep deprived, I blurted this out. I said, Nancy, I didn't know it was so bad. I can't help you kill yourself, but if you do, I will still think well of you. I'll miss you. And maybe I'll understood why you had to get out of all the pain. And I thought, I just gave her permission. I just blew it. I remember saying, don't write that in the record. and I thought she was, and she looked at me for the first time. And I thought she was going to say, thank you. Thank you for understanding. I'm overdue. And she looked right through me. And at that moment, I realized that what I was seeing was correct. You know, the feeling or the empathy or the resonance, whatever you want to call it. And she said, if you can really understand why I might have to kill myself to get out of the pain, maybe I won't need to. And then she smiled. And at that point, I got this realization. I said, you know, I'll tell you what we're going to do, because this is really the first time that I made eye contact with her. I'm not going to give you advice, solutions, or treatment unless you ask for them. Because when I do that and you nod, you know, you're cooperating, but then you don't follow through because you've tried everything. Would that be okay? And at that point, her eyes brightened a little bit with a look that said, keep talking, I'm intrigued here. And then while I was looking into her eyes, and I was, it's like I was holding her hand in the dark night of the soul. And I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find you wherever you are. And I'm going to keep you company there. Because you've been there alone too long, especially at 2:30 in the morning. And I just don't want you to feel alone there. Would that be okay? And then her eyes got a little teary. But it just changed everything. And you know, people will say, well, geez, you can do that. You're an empath. I am telling you, if we can put aside any agenda we have and listen with something, and there's a term that I heard recently, which I love, and listen with compassionate emptiness, meaning you empty your mind of any agenda that you have, which is just separating you and the other person who's stuck there, And whatever they share with you, you just receive with compassion. Anyone can do this. Something I've been recently speaking to people about is the epidemic of don't ask, don't tell. Because I think what perpetuates a lot of the problems we see in the world are don't ask, don't tell. And the people who live by that are good people. But, we're too busy. We're overwhelmed. My mind's overwhelmed. My wife told me before I left today, don't wash the wooden thing the same as the other thing. And I said, okay. And then after that, I couldn't find my keys. our minds are overwhelmed. And so one of the reasons we take a don't ask, don't tell is because if you're talking to someone, you say, how are you doing? And they look you right in the eye and they say, do you really want to know? And then you feel stuck and they say, well, if you really want to know, I tried to kill myself this weekend. If you're a human being, you have to drop everything. You have to drop everything. And most people are just so overwhelmed, they're afraid if they drop anything, they'll lose what they're supposed to be doing. So I think that's one of the problems. And then I'm going to give you a final piece of information because you're probably taking a nap already.
No, I don't think anybody's taking a nap. But I'll just interject and we'll just redirect this just a little bit. I shared with you in the pre-interview that I've been doing this work for 42 years, and not in suicide prevention, but in communication with individuals who are experiencing chronic illness and with people who are experiencing conflicts within, their families and what have you. And what you're talking about is it's so spot on from all the years of research that we've done. And I think the compassionate emptiness is a pretty wonderful way of describing it. It reminds me of the Seinfeld show. Do you remember the show where George and Jerry decide they're going to the producers to see if they can get the show, produced? And the guys turn around to them and say, so what's the show about? What's it about? And George looks at them and he goes with a big smile on his face, it's about nothing. Okay. And fundamentally, I'm in the business of training doctors and nurses and health professionals. And when you say to them, we're going to train you or show you or share with you how to do nothing, well, they completely flip out. And we explain to them that being present to another person, fully present without, as you say, there's nothing else going on in your mind. You're listening and watching that person's movie. You're totally focused. It is profoundly transformational. So I think it's wonderful that this work is being applied to very urgent situations such as suicide prevention. But no, continue. You thought you were going to bore us, but there's another piece of information you said you were going to share with us. So please go ahead.
Well, here's my unsolicited commentary on social media, which I plead no contest to. I probably spend too much time on it. I'd like your take on this, because it could just be I'm just feeling my age and I'm overly sentimental. But once upon a time, if memory serves, there used to be certain phenomena called lovemaking, tenderness, patience, and those were all built in a foundation of something we call oxytocin. Oxytocin is a bonding hormone. It helps you feel close. It's what causes mothers to bond really deeply with their infants, which is helpful when their infants are screaming. And once upon a time, oxytocin led to another neurotransmitter called dopamine. In other words, it was pleasurable to make love instead of merely having sex. It was pleasurable to experience joy instead of just having excitement. Well, I think what's happened with the social media and the internet is oxytocin has been pushed aside, and now it's adrenaline that triggers dopamine. And so we do all seek pleasure, and dopamine is related to that, But what used to trigger it was closeness and intimacy. Now what triggers it is intensity. And the problem is, as you know, and maybe some of our listeners know, adrenaline is really exciting, but you know, the only thing more powerful than an adrenaline rush is an adrenaline crash. And when people abruptly come off adrenaline, they crash. And by the way, a lot of extreme athletes who have ADD, and a lot of people say, well, how can they focus so much? Well, it's because by always pushing the envelope, they're running on adrenaline, and the adrenaline is natural Adderall. So extreme athletes, people who push the envelope, want to keep the adrenaline rush high because it helps them stay focused. And so what's happened is the world, especially younger people, are becoming more addicted to adrenaline to connect them with dopamine and pleasure, which also explains, you hear, you know, more and more people talking about loneliness, not just aloneness, but loneliness. And, you know, and loneliness is really an absence of closeness. So I would love to change that. Here's something that helps give people a real surge of oxytocin. In the documentary, Stay Alive, and why we're excited about it is, first of all, Kevin Hines is riveting. His story of jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, it is riveting. His own documentary, Suicide, The Ripple Effect, won the British Oscar 6 weeks ago for Best Documentary. And he's an amazing force of nature. And we were fortunate to interview him. But what we really wanted to do is there's tons of suicide awareness, and yet the suicide rate is going up. So what we wanted to introduce is, okay, there's awareness, but what do you do? So what do you do when you're talking to one of them? Yeah, okay, so you get them on the hotline and you check boxes, and that's better than not having a hotline, but what do you do? So that's where we introduced some of what I've been doing for years. And if people go to YouTube and search Stay Alive Video on YouTube, Stay Alive Video, they will see the video is 72 minutes and it's chopped up into 8 chapters. Or you can see the full video. It's all free there. And, you know, we're not making any money from it. We're just trying to get it out there. We wouldn't mind people supporting it or sponsoring it so we can get the word out. But in Chapter 7, I talk about something I call targeted interventional empathy. And I talk about the 7 words.
We are well past the first break because this conversation is so interesting. So you may think it's, you know, you've probably repeated this so many times that you kind of think, you know, that it's getting kind of known, easily known to you. But this is a fascinating topic. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about the 7 words, and let's talk about the work that you're doing in suicide prevention with people. So listeners, don't go away. We will be right back with Dr. Mark.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and #1 national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Back with Dr. Mark Goulston, who is the author of Just Listen, the number one international top-selling book on listening. Doctor, before the break, you were mentioning the seven words that are interventional, that are interventional, and these are the words that you introduce in the conversations when you are working with or speaking with someone who is in need of support. So do you want to tell us about those seven words? And before you do, I just want to mention, I'm sure you are very much aware that Robin Williams, who of course is incredibly well known, was incredibly well known, he of course committed suicide given his brain condition. But what he said was really powerful. He said, "I used to think the worst thing in life was to end up alone, but it's not. The worst thing in life is to end up surrounded by people that make you feel all alone." So I just thought that was such a poignant statement that it might be a good marinate for your seven words.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to respond to what he said, because I have a pretty good track record, and when I ask people over the years what helped in our meeting, and more than a few said, "You're the only person in my life whose face I put a smile on. You were the only person who enjoyed me, and when I'd see you, you'd have this huge grin, happy to see me. I didn't think you were lying to me to grin and be happy to see me. I just thought you were crazy."
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" They said, "Well, look at the world from my life. I am a burden to everyone. I scare the heck out of my parents. my brothers and sisters think I'm manipulative, and they're not wrong. When I've seen other professionals, they're decent, well-intentioned, but, you know, they have schedules, and I understand that. But they're often checking boxes to satisfy protocols, and I understand that. But I don't feel enjoyed by anyone. And the fact that you actually enjoyed seeing me, and it had nothing to do with whether I was taking my meds or getting side effects, you were like this oasis where I wasn't a burden. But everywhere else in my life, I was a burden. And when people like us feel that way, we think, well, for such a burden, why don't we just let everyone off the hook? And I thought that was fascinating. And I bring that back because of what Robin Williams said. He said, when you're surrounded by people and you feel alone.
So right,
you can sort of get that.
Exactly. Well, I think, you know, what you were talking about, don't ask, don't tell. I'll share a terrible thing with you. Something happened to me today. Happened to me about 6 o'clock in the morning. And it's an example, and I fess up. Listeners, I'm fessing up here. This is, I think, probably, it's really a distance between who I've known myself to be and how I live in the world sometimes today. 6 o'clock in the morning, I heard this barking. It sounded like a dog barking. And I live on 20 acres in the woods. There are no dogs barking in my neighborhood. So I hear this dog barking and barking and barking and barking. Normally, I would get up, and then I would go, and I would investigate and see, does this dog need help? Why is this dog barking? What is a dog doing on my property? And finally, I heard this final kind of this howl. It was a cross between a cry and a howl. And then all the barking stopped. Now, maybe his owner found him. I don't know. I don't know what happened. But I remember lying in bed saying, I don't want to know. And I think we have come to a place in our society where what you were saying is about being overwhelmed. Our cup is so full that it's like, I don't want to know what happened. I'll just think the best and let it go away. So thank you for letting me share that. And now, you know, the seven words, which combined with your smile are obviously very, very transformative.
Well, the seven words, and if you go to chapter 7, if you go to YouTube and go to Stay Alive video, and click on videos, you'll see a link to all 8 chapters and the full documentary. We broke it up because each of the participants introduced various chapters. So chapter 7 is about the seven words, and I'm doing it with Kevin. So Kevin is the person who jumped, and I mentioned and the way you would use this if you're a parent worried about a kid or if you're worried about a spouse, and let's say you're dealing with someone who is sullen, says leave me alone, I don't want to talk about it. Well, how are you feeling? I'm okay. Well, you don't sound okay. Just leave me alone. So that's not an unusual conversation between parents and children or even spouses. So the key is human nature is we back off and we say, okay. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I was just trying to help, and we get apologetic. And that's what they may want, but that's not what they need. They don't know what they need. And so you let them vent and you wait 2 seconds without responding. That will communicate that what they said landed, but you're not reactive, and you say to them, and this is what happens in chapter 7. I said to Kevin, 7 words, and they'll look at you, and they'll say what, and in their mind they think, I just told you I don't want to talk about it, and they'll go what? You say yeah, 7 words, and the tone is really important. So I'm going to try to give you the tone, because the tone is not checking boxes. The tone is almost like, it's almost like you're mesmerizing them and drawing them into the space between you. So here are the 7 words I said to Kevin, and you can use hurt, afraid, angry, shamed, alone, lonely, tired. Pick one. And I think you're not going to be surprised. He smiles at me and he says, all of them. And at that point, you're in. You've gotten into the innermost. You say, pick one. Angry. Good. Tell me about it. Tell me about a time when it was at its worst. maybe 3 in the morning sometime. What happens is they start to talk about it. And when people talk about it, a time that felt really awful, but they felt alone in it, as they're sharing it with you, they're not alone as they're talking to you. And there's a phenomena which I'm sure you're aware of, and I'm sure you're better able to explain it with research. Something that I've noticed is that when someone tells you about an incident in such detail that you as the listener can see it, they re-experience the incident. Mm-hmm. So when you were describing, you know, if you said, you know, I heard a dog barking and I just wish it would go away. But you said, you know, I heard this dog barking, and Mark, this is where we live, and we don't really have dogs, and, you know, it sort of went away, and then and I didn't want to know, and maybe the owner got it, but maybe it got killed. I mean, I just didn't want to think about it. But do you follow me? By going into details, you you went right back to it. But as you were sharing it with me, my hope is, even though this is a radio show, you felt a little less alone. You were sharing with me. Boy, you know, you're saying it, you know, Mark, it's a part of me that I'm not proud of. It's not who I believe myself to be. I mean, I'm someone, if I hear pain from a living creature, you know, I want to go there, but I didn't. I didn't want to know, and that's not who I believe myself to be. And so the 7 words is a way of inviting people into feeling felt. After Anthony Bourdain died by suicide, I wrote an article in Medium, which you can still find, and it's called Why People Kill Themselves, It's Not Depression. Got a lot of reads, 500,000 views, 70,000 reads in 6 days. And I said, there's hundreds of millions of people who are depressed. Maybe it's billions. And the majority of them don't die by suicide. There's many people who lose jobs or lose relationships. The majority of them don't die by suicide. It all contributes. And I said, in my observation, what they all have in common is at the end, they die from despair. Mm-hmm. And if you break the word despair into DES-PAIR, it means feeling unprepared, hopeless, unprepared with the future, powerless, helpless, useless, meaningless, worthless. And in the end, pointless. And when you feel unpaired with all the reasons to live, you pair with death to take the pain away. And that's why I think if you can pair with people underneath, sort of in the dark night of their soul, and you just pair with them, they will lean into it, because many of them don't want to kill themselves. They just want to make the pain go away.
They want relief. What you're saying is so true. About 20 years ago, I was doing a presentation on heart disease. And this is also another shocking thing people don't know. With all the obesity, you know, with all of the factors that go into, you know, candidates for heart disease, there was this incredible study that was done and looked at who dies of heart disease, who has a sudden heart attack. And what was really shocking is that you could see people who are 300-400 pounds overweight, quite obese, terrible diets, didn't exercise. But basically, they were paired. They were in community. They were not less. They were valued. And I was presenting this this course, and I dug up this research that said, without question, you'd think it would be all of these other factors that would go into what caused people to die of heart disease. What causes people to die of heart disease is hopelessness. And that's what causes us to die, period. You know, when life loses its sweetness, when there is no joy and no connection and no value and no belonging, well, what's a person to do? I mean, we are. Why is it, Mark, that we can't accept the fact that we're herd animals? We're designed to be in relationship with one another. We're designed to belong. We're designed to survive together and to laugh together and to live together. Maybe, you know, at some point we'll come to understand better why people feel isolated and why people feel hopeless. But I think what you're saying about suicide, I think in some ways, heart disease can be suicide. Anything can be suicide, because people know The Harvard study said 7 out of 8 people who are given a diagnosis by their physician saying, if you don't stop this or you don't change that, if you don't change the way that you're living, you're going to die soon. And 7 out of 10 do, 7 out of 8 do nothing. That is really shocking. To me, that's a kind of suicide. What do you think?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And there's one of my patients years ago had a great quote that when you're trying to stop a habit that's bad for you, they said doing with takes the pain out of doing without. And what they were talking about is sponsorships, the community of AA, and that when you're doing something with other people, and again, in AA meetings, there's no crosstalk. You know, you're just talking. You know, you're not giving each other advice. And but when you're doing something with others, it's easier to let go of things than you can on your own. I want to say something, another controversial thing, because, you know, just to
controversy
sure
is good. It's good, actually. It makes people think. That's why it's good.
Well, you're going to join me on this thing, and we're both going to get banned, because you were talking about what's happened, why the disconnect. And I have this notion, which I call Revenge of the Nerds 2.0.
That sounds intriguing.
I thought you'd like it. And really what it is that, you know, a lot of the superstars that are seen as visionaries, the Elon Musks, the Jeff Bezos, the Steve Jobs, they were nerds. They were geeks. They didn't get close to people because people in their mind just didn't compute. But what happened is they developed these amazing technologies that have now addicted the world. So the world, the visionaries of the world don't know how to connect interpersonally, but they've developed things that have turned us all into adrenaline junkies. And now we want more. So what's happening is we're all addicted to that excitement. And instead of just being, you know, the person who walked around, you know, when I was younger, the person who walked around the halls with seven pencils in their pocket and a little ink stain from the one that they was leaking, they're the masters of the universe. And the point is, I love technology. I love mostly what it's done for our lives, but it really has disconnected us. And so we get really wowed by it. And being wowed feeds adrenaline. And again, as I said, I think tenderness and compassion, lovemaking, patience is becoming extinct, and then that leads to loneliness. That leads to I just don't care. And,
right, exactly.
And that, yeah,
I would say that this is just my personal observation. Looking at, I don't have a cell phone, and I mean to tell you this, that I am punished literally. If you only knew how difficult it is to change a password, to confirm your identity, to go, I mean, I have been through so many moments and hours of frustration because I don't have a cell phone. So they can't text me, and I can't say, oh, yeah, it's me. And I don't have a microwave, and I have not participated in many of the, in any of the social media. I mean, I have a Facebook page because I have a school. But the point is, what my observation is that we have become a nation of anxiety. And you were talking about adrenaline. Well, anxiety produces adrenaline. I was, for several years, I was observing people and their obsession with their cell phone. And I came to the conclusion that what was going on, the obsession was about being afraid that they were going to miss something, that something good was going to happen, and they weren't going to know, that they weren't going to get the good news, or they weren't going to be flattered or invited or liked or loved, or they weren't going to be appealing or attractive or invited. There was this anxiety about having to be obsessed with what was going on with that phone, so much so that they're sleeping with them next to their ear in their beds, which is really unhealthy. And it's that we're so hungry. There's such a hunger in our culture for connection and for recognition and to belong that everything is out of control. Everything, you know, the pill taking, the depression, the anxiety, the suicide. We're isolated. I couldn't agree with you more. I think we are wildly isolated. And I don't want to add to our isolation, but we're going to take another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the work that you do. And also, you know, how people can find out more about you and about the work that you're doing. So listeners, don't go away. We will be back with Dr. Mark Gulston in just a moment.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful, pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
We are back with Dr. Mark Gulston, who is the number one international top best-selling book author on listening, which is quite an achievement, and I'm delighted. And I will tell you, listeners, that you guys know that I wrote a book called Changing Behavior. It's really all about listening and being present to people. But when my book came out, it was always behind Dr. Goldston's book. It was always waiting to get into the number one spot because Dr. Goldston's book was there. And his book has rave reviews. It's wildly well received, and it's been published in 22 languages around the world. So if you're looking for a really good book and you want to get in touch with how to be a better listener, check out Just Listen on Amazon. So Dr. Goldston, before the break, we were talking about our anxiety, our isolation, and I know you're working with suicide, which is so incredibly important. What do you see? What is your prognosis? I mean, things are getting worse. They're not getting better. What do you see for the future of our culture and the culture of isolationism that's going on?
Well, I see it getting worse. And I'll tell you, my approach, and what frustrated me for 30 or 40 years is people would send me people, and I'd say, well, can I show you what I'm doing? And they said, well, if it's not evidence-based and you don't have a control group, we can't look at it. And I said, well, why do you send me people? And they say, well, you have this reputation that when people come to you, they don't kill themselves. Well, wouldn't you want to see it? It's like there was a chip missing in my head or their head. No, we can't even look at that. So what's happened is that what I realized and what people have been telling me is, Mark, you need to develop a process. You need to develop steps that people can follow. So those seven words, you don't need me to deliver the seven words. If you kind of get it and you share it with someone and they open up, I've just given that to you. But getting back to what you were saying is, what are we going to do, you know, about the future? So I'm going to share. So I like coming up with acronyms that people, a process that people can follow, and I'd like your take on this. But something that I'll be writing about in the near future is another formula that I call H2FAR, H the number 2, FAR, and in my mind, and it's being informed by my holding my first grandchild, who's a month and a half old, and when I hold him and I look into his eyes, it's really informing me. And when I look into his eyes and I see that he's having stomach aches or whatever, I can see that he's feeling there's all this pain and he doesn't know where it's coming from. It's kind of like when your dog looks at you and is in pain. It looks at you, help me, help me, help me. And so the H2 is that there is hurt that comes from the world that's unavoidable, comes from inside our bodies, it's unavoidable. But the second hurt is how the world around us responds. So as I'm holding my grandson, I can imagine, you know, that if he's crying, and if instead of my just trying to resonate with his crying, you know, with the intensity with which I'm holding him, I don't want to hold him too close or too loose, but it's like I'm trying to resonate with the intensity of his pain. I'm going where he's at. But imagine if he's in pain, he's powerless, and he looks out, and he gets a look from one of his parents, and this is not my daughter or son-in-law, that says, can you stop crying already? Because I have a spinning class. You know, can you finish the bottle? Because we want to start watching the DVD. So the second hurt of life is how the world around you, when you're powerless, responds to you, and if it abuses you or neglects you or abandons you. That then triggers FAR, and FAR stands for it triggers fear. And when you get through the fearful part, meaning you survived it, the A is it triggers anger. I'm angry. Wow. And then R is retaliation. So hurt from the outside world or your physical world, hurt from how the world responds to you poorly, triggers fear, anger, retaliation. And if the world has demeaned you and humiliated you and rubbed your face in it, the retaliation is violence. I heard a saying from someone who, you know, had those feelings but didn't act on them, said, when you feel put down and pushed away, you find a way to get in and get even.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that that's what we're looking at with all of this gun violence.
Totally.
You know, people talk about guns. I mean, I don't have a gun. I don't want a gun. I stay far away from guns. But it's not the gun. It's we've created a culture of emotional deprivation and violence. That's really what we've done, if we want to be honest with ourselves. And we don't want to recognize that. See, I think the problem, and I don't know how you feel about this, we don't want to take responsibility for the culture that we're all contributing to. We want to look for something to blame, like the guns. But most of these people who go out and, you know, do these acts of violence, they're isolated, they're angry, they're unaccepted, they're rejected. And so, yes, it all makes sense. But how do you start a dialogue about that? How do you dialogue with the families of your patients? What do you say to them? How do you engage them in that conversation?
Well, I think in order to be empathic, you need to feel empathized with. So whenever I'm dealing with families, I may use the 7 words with them, because you don't have to feel suicidal to experience those 7 words. And I might say to a mother or father, I got 7 words for you when you're dealing with your child, when he or she is at their worst. And then give them the 7 words. And what happens is they lean into it. I'll tell you, I have a podcast called My Wake Up Call, and I interview people whose lie about what's most important to them in life. I'm going to have you on my podcast. And then what's the journey that led to it? And a recent one was with a fellow named Jay Reed. And he has a TEDx talk called The Most Important Conversation You'll Ever Have With Your Teens. And what he talks about is he's a serial entrepreneur, and his 14-year-old son hung himself last year.
Oh, my Lord, how tragic.
And so his TEDx talk, catch this, is he's on vacation with his wife, Jay, and they're celebrating just how great their life is. He gets a text message from Ryan, his son, and it says, "Don't blame yourself. I'm so sorry. Goodbye."
Oh.
And he calls home screaming, and the mother-in-law is in the house. And he's screaming, "Go find Ryan! Go find Ryan!" And she searches the whole house, and she goes up in the attic, and she screams back in the phone, "He hung himself, Jay!"
Oh my God!
And then they found 2 messages, notes, and one was, "Here's the password codes to his technology," and the second one note was, "Tell my story." So Jay is doing a movie called Tell My Story, and he has a personal mission called End Teenage Suicide by 2030. But what's interesting, and people can find, if you go to My Wake Up Call, my podcast, and you look at a recent episode, what was fascinating in the both in his TEDx talk and in the podcast is, and he's an entrepreneur, so as he's reliving the moment, he's crying. He's crying with me. He's upset. He's grief-stricken. But I got to tell you, Georgiana, within 30 seconds, he hops into it. This is what we're going to do. And the next thing we're going to do is this. And we're going to create a mission or whatever. And on the podcast, because I'm an interventional empath, I said, Jay, stop. And we're doing it by video, even though you can only hear the audio. And I said, Jay, I want you to feel as much pain as you're capable of feeling right now. And I'm not going to leave you there. You know, I got you because I got you on video. And I just want you to go as bad as you can feel. Just do that. And he pauses and he goes there, and you can see his entrepreneurial energy is gone. And I said, if I told you right now, and you're feeling that way, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to have these solutions, and we're going to try this, and we're going to mobilize this. Is it getting through to you? And he said, absolutely not. And I said, is that because, and here's the empathic part of me, I said, is that because what you really want to say to me right now is, you know, Mark, I can't get the hurt out of my head. It won't leave me alone. I don't know what to do about it. I just can't get it out. Is the reason those other things aren't getting through because you're feeling that? And he got emotional and I got emotional. And my message in the podcast, if you're a parent, you need to be able to go into their pain because they're immobilized by it. when you give them solutions, it's to deal with your own anxiety because they scare the heck out of you. Mm-hmm. But you got to be able to go into their pain and keep them company in it. And initially, it'll be really difficult. Initially, when they cry, you think you're making them worse. No, you're letting them cry. You know, you're opening the abscess. They're crying as pus coming out of hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be easy, but I'll tell you, when you discover it, it's a game changer and a lifesaver.
Wow. Well, I have to say this because we're coming to the end of the show. I can't believe the time went by so fast. The work that you're doing is critical, and we need you to say all the ways that people can get a hold of your work, contact you, your website. So the listeners, I'm sure there are many who want this information and want to pass it on. So before we end, can you tell us your website and tell us the best way to get a hold of you? We do know your book can be found on Amazon, and you did tell us about the documentary. So do you want to repeat those things so people can have that?
Yeah. If you go to Mark Goulston, G-O-U-L-S-T-O-N on Amazon, you can see I have 7 books, and so you can find them all. Just Listen is the big bestseller. A recent one is called Talking to Crazy, How to Deal with People Who Drive You Crazy. It's not about mental illness. So you can find my books there. Go to YouTube and look up Stay Alive Video, and it'll take you to the channel that has all the complete video of Stay Alive plus chapters. You can go to my website, markgoulston.com, and it looks slightly different because what I talk about there is, if you go to my LinkedIn profile, it's listed as Elephant Hunter. I may have to change it, one of my last mentors, a fellow named Warren Dennis, a big leadership guy, said to me, as he said, you know, Mark, you find the elephant in the room and you bring it out safely.
Oh, what a beautiful compliment. That is lovely.
And so that's what it is. There's an elephant in the room. We've been talking about the elephants in the room, the don't ask, don't tell, and all that. Also, go to my Twitter feed, because this is something you can immediately do. If you go to @MarkGoulston, MarkGoulston, my top pinned tweet is, do you know of anyone in your community who committed suicide? I know it's died by suicide, but you know, I put this up. It has 2.4 million impressions, has over 1,400 comments, and half of them are people just listing all the people they know who have killed themselves. It's chilling, daunting, but you'll feel less alone if you've been touched by suicide. People list all the times they've tried. Some people list, you know, I'll probably do it again. And again, I don't really, it's not a clinic. It's a community. And so I keep telling people to reach out to each other and be compassionate. You know, if someone has been leaving comments and you haven't heard from them, say, are you there? It'll make their it'll make their day, and you'll feel worthwhile. So I would really love to get the word out there, because it's already built in community with 2.4 million impressions and all kinds of activity. So I hope if anyone's on Twitter, I know you're not, but
we do have a business Twitter for our school. Well, Dr. Mark, you are such a valuable asset to all of us, and certainly something that needs to be better known, and we will be very happy to do what we can to support the work that you're doing. And on behalf of all of us, thank you, and thank you for sharing, taking the time to come on and give us this incredible insight, which we all need. So, listeners, if you want to hear more of the Dr. Mark interviews and things that he's shared, please go to his website and look up his book. And in the meantime, don't forget to return next week when we have another inspiring, uplifting, and really interesting conversation here on Living Above the Drama.